And here we are on YouTube for another edition of Overtime. We have a new setup now. I think I sound okay. Kyle, did you make it?
I did.
You did. And you're also... Okay, that's us on YouTube. Wow. How about that?
We have a new setup now.
Okay, well, you know, we don't need to hear us twice, so we know it works. Now, Alex, did you make it in Skype land?
I am indeed here.
And I can you turn that off? Thank you. Can you hear us okay?
Loud and clear.
Okay, good, good. So the only thing left, then, is the telephone. And if the telephone works, then, Kyle, you fixed it.
Yeah, these levels look really good. I didn't do this all myself. In fact, most of... our problems were me doing things badly, but I got some expert review, and I got we got schooled.
You listened to what you did wrong.
I did. Yeah. I learned from my mistakes.
Then you undid it.
Except my punishment, which is to do better, and I got all the necessary supplies to make this a lot better, and we're going to even improve it further. So
okay.
This looks really good, though.
Those levels sounded good on YouTube.
All you know, the
people
levels
complain
are right.
That our levels are low. I think they're finally up where they should be.
This was the result of reconfiguring some stuff. We're okay. Not using the same interface. It's all a whole bunch of work that was really, really rewarding.
Well, I hear the phone is ringing, even though I haven't given out the phone number yet.
All right.
I think this is a good opportunity to test the levels of the phone. So why don't you pick up the phone?
Are we looking for new callers? Anybody in particular?
We're just looking for that caller because okay. The phone's ringing, and we'll give out the
be
phone
careful.
Number.
This is the hardest
this
part
is the
of
very
this.
First time we take a call in the new system, and let's be patient. And good evening. You are on Off the Hook Overtime.
Oh, it sounds so much better.
Well, Rebel approves. If Rebel approves, then we've done right. Okay.
This is it.
This is it.
Let's see. Now, we have a new
system. Now, hold on a second, Rebel. Hold on a second. We still have to test Alex. Now, Alex, can you hear Rebel?
Who?
Oh, please, don't do this.
Is Rebel on the line?
You can't hear him?
I can hear him. I'm just screwing with you.
What a jerk. Okay. Can
made my heart skip.
Rebel, can you hear the jerk? I mean, can you hear Alex?
Alex. I can hear Alex.
You can. Okay. You know what? Our work is done. Thank you, everybody. Good night.
Amazing.
Yeah. I can hear Alex, yes.
All right, and I can hear you, Rebel.
Do we have anything to talk about?
Talk amongst yourselves.
Yes, okay. All right, now, I don't know if I told you this. I may have told you this. All
you
the
probably
exchanges
do.
In my area, plus 99, well, all right. I think some of the exchanges in my area, like my area has like maybe two or three exchanges. And you know how you see dial 9901 and get, you know, what central office is. Some of them have been changed to a marketing recording that says, you know, the telephone number you have is not in service. However, we can help you find another listing or whatever.
Really?
Yeah. Would you like me to demonstrate?
Go ahead. Which exchanges have a marketing line now?
The 225 or hold on.
By the way, just as celebration of this new system that we have set up, this conversation is going to be solely between Rebel and Alex back and forth so that they can have a nice conversation because they haven't been able to do that in the past. And Kyle and I are just going to sit back, maybe have a drink or something while we listen to you guys.
All right.
Okay, well, you listen. All right. But Emmanuel, just comment when you want to comment and, you know, come in when you want to comment. Okay, now. All right, let me just see if this works. Hold on, hopefully I won't lose you.
Let's hope not. I don't know what we would do without each other, Rebel. Are you lost?
Is your conversation finished? Is the operator? Are you finished?
Hold on, Alex. Hold on. Wait a minute.
You're still talking?
In.
Okay.
Yep.
Wait, hold on.
Sir, we need this line for other people. If you're not going to use it to talk.
Right, it's not supervision is not kicking in. That's why that's not working. Anyway. Well, you know what? Maybe I could do this. I could do it on my computer, but I have to set some things up. But anyway, But it just says we can find listings, you know, in your area. Please hold and things like that. The 718-225-9901 exchange. The 718-225 exchange. 718-225-9901 will give you that recording. And but if you dial 718, I think maybe 229 or something, 9901, it gives you the central office.
Well, let me ask you this, though. What about the other 99 numbers, like 9970, that would always give you a busy
some
line?
Some of them do it, and some of them don't. Some of them have that marketing recording. Some of them don't. Some of them give you the central office.
So are you saying that some of these Exchange plus 99XX test numbers are now all being transitioned to some kind of marketing line?
Yeah. You know what? Let me see if I could do this. I have to... it's going to take me some... All right. I'm going to play this on my computer so that I can actually...
I'll tell you, I find the transition of these test lines that used to be universally accessible throughout all of the, I guess, the 9X area back in the day, I find that the fact that those are going away much sadder than the loss of AM radio.
Don't need to do that.
Wow, I heard that. That's
well, you're not supposed to talk.
That's insulting.
Manuel, you're
AM radio,
not be part of this.
A bunch of phone numbers.
Wait, AM radio. See, that's all it took. It's just so easy to rile them up.
Yeah, 9970 was busy. 9971 was a fast busy, known as a reorder. 9979. Does anybody remember what 9979 used to be?
That was some weird tone, wasn't it?
Oh, most things 99XX were weird tones.
Yeah.
Rebel, do you remember what 9979 was?
The suffix? Was that sweeping tone?
Sweep tone, you got it. Yeah, it was a sweep tone.
The one that where my parents used to think it was, if you heard it, that the phone was traced or tapped or whatever.
Yeah, there are all kinds of rumors about phone numbers.
They literally had something in that phone book and it says 9970 tapped or something like that. Let me see if this works. 9901 mark.
Yeah, they tell people call a number. If you hear a tone, that means the call was traced. and people believed it.
718-225-9901. Why can't I do this? What?
I have a theory.
Receiving calls. I'm trying to do it on my... I can't do it on... All right, well...
This has been fascinating, but we do have other people waiting.
Anyway, I'll just start to now telemarketers use AI to call people, like, you know, they'll use artificial intelligence. Like, they'll listen for the word hello. They'll say, hello, this is, let me demonstrate that. Maybe that will work. Hold on.
I get a bunch of these types of voicemail and call attempts repeatedly.
You have Google constantly calling you with artificial intelligence. It's terrible.
Let me try this. Hold on. Let me try this thing. Hold on. I think it's this one. Emmanuel?
Yes, Rebel.
Wait, hold on. Let me try this.
You're so patient.
To be connected to the next available agent, please press 1 now.
Listen to what happened.
Hello. Thanks for answering our call.
Oh, no, it doesn't
happen. Like all of our agents are currently assisting other customers.
Hold on. Hang up.
Wow, Rebel, I've never heard anything like that before. It's well, the busy signal is the most interesting part of that.
What was that supposed to be?
And can you not disconnect from that? Is that the problem?
What's happening here?
I think the busy signal won. In a battle between... Oh, and now we have...
Our namesake.
Off the hook tone. How about that? All right. Well, let's open up the phone lines. Let's give out the phone number. 802-321-4225. 801... 321. Did I say 801? Is it 801 or 802?
802.
I said
802.
321. Excuse me. 802-321-4225. That is our phone number. Rebel, please don't call because we have other people that want to get through.
Operators are standing.
Okay.
Or sitting, lounging around in the
Is this a different call?
Vicinity. Yeah.
Okay.
No, it isn't a different call.
It's Rebel calling back, even though I asked him specifically not to.
I mean, I'm clairvoyant. Let's get this over with.
Right. Pick up. Rebel? Is this Rebel?
Okay.
You got 30 seconds, Rebel.
I don't know what happened.
You got 30 seconds.
All right. So basically what it says is you're using, you know, like automation. It says, hi, this is whatever.
From 20 seconds.
Department. How are you today?
Not well. Not well, Rebel.
Okay, good. Well, the reason why I'm calling is because, you know, you're eligible for a Medicare, free COVID test or whatever. You do have Medicare, right?
Why don't you take a long walk off a short pier?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand. You do have Medicare, right?
Yeah, I... Wow, sorry. So you're supposed to have this conversation.
Yeah. Medicare. If you start talking, it'll hang up. It'll think that you're an answering machine or something.
Yeah, well, maybe that's the only refuge for us. Rebel, thanks for enlightening us on this. We're going to open up the phone lines to other people. And 802-321-4225 is the phone number.
My favorite thing to do is put some sort of irritating thing for the automated system to pick up, or we should experiment. People should try different tones or different keys on your voicemail or on an answering system that you want to play around with. Oh, we have a call.
Okay, let's take this other call. And good evening. You're on Off the Cuff.
Hey. All right.
How you doing? And who is this?
I am here. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
Well, I'm the usual.
You're the usual.
I call quite often.
Oh, you do call.
Yes, I'm the usual. Yeah, okay. I do call.
Where are you calling from?
New York City. You should know because I called you on the toll-free number, and they should give you. But I don't know what kind of arrangement you have.
I don't either. I don't even see the phone. But what's on your mind?
Okay.
What? Glad you made it.
Yeah.
Well. Yeah.
We didn't give out the toll-free number.
I got through a Rebel. We're still on according to, what do you call it? Oh, no, maybe I'm hearing myself. But anyway.
Eventually you will hear yourself.
So I had a few notes, and I'm so emotionally overwrought by getting through that I don't remember what I was going to say. So if you don't mind, it would be literally 10 seconds. I'm going to sprint to the bathroom where I was when I wrote these things down and come back. Is that okay?
Yes, you can do that. If it's 10 seconds.
Okay, I'll be right back.
We'll fill the air with banter, say that you are not listening to WBAI New York because this is not the radio. This is YouTube.
It's Channel 2600.
Channel 2600 on YouTube. And while you're in Channel 2600, why not explore and see all the other videos and audio things we have? And we're back.
So, first of all, I wanted to say that I was always skeptical of artificial intelligence. My slogan is, if it's artificial, it's not intelligence. But if it can't make a poem about Trump, I must perhaps reassess my assessment. I'm not just being...
you can make a poem. You can make a poem about Trump. There's no question about making a poem. It's making a nice poem about Trump. That was the challenge.
Well, I mean, that deposes for the intelligence of artificial intelligence. If you cannot make a nice poem about Trump, then it's really intelligent. Because, as you were saying, there is, there are some people that there is very little to say that is nice, in spite of what the devil's advocate keeps saying. And I wanted to make a general comment to the sophomoric debate club attitude that is annoying. It's good when you're producing interesting ideas, but if it's just to be contrary, it gets a little tired.
I agree.
And the other thing is that I did take a few notes. There is two more. When you were talking about the Volkswagen debacle and the subscription, I got thinking, is 911 free on cell phones? And does anybody know?
It is.
Because toll-free numbers, when you call them on the cell phone, you get charged, even if they're 800 numbers or like the number I just called. So I wonder, you know, if anybody's actually checking if this happens, because, you know, they would say, hey, the service is not free, and somebody's paying for it anyway, so it might as well be.
No, 911 is free. You are correct that toll-free numbers charge like regular calls if you are paying for each call on your cell plan, which relatively few people are these days.
But what about like 311, 411, 811?
That I don't know. 411 was information last I checked. I know that cost a pretty penny. But things are changing.
Indeed, the cell phone, it costs quite a bit cell phone.
Never seen a charge. Yeah, information, maybe they would change that.
But most people have unlimited or a huge number of minutes, so that and people don't make phone calls anymore, too. There's a lot less of that going on.
I guess I'm very old-fashioned. Then again, speaking to the Volkswagen debacle, you know, the Fourth Amendment does not apply in Germany, so they have different laws. And even in this country, as Alex can testify, courts have been eroding it in all sorts of ways. So, you know, it's not a matter of making an argument in that direction. I think your argument, Emmanuel, was quite right, that there should be a sort of a magic switch that for these kind of emergencies, you know, in spite of whatever civil rights this may be implying a threat to, it wouldn't be a threat to, because it would be a specific case if there is, you know, a car with an actual kidnapping, whether it's incidental or willful, taking place, the police should be able to intervene. So, again, you know, stop the debate, club attitude, and let's talk about, you know, real ideas and real facts.
Let me ask you this, caller. Let me ask you this. Let's change the facts slightly. Let's say that it's not the parents' car.
Slightly, but go on. Yes.
Let's change the facts slightly, you know, and it's a different type of argument, different type of thought experiment here. Let's say that a child is abducted in a car. It's not the parent's car. Let's say it's your car that the police believe the child is in. Should the police then be able to automatically override, or not say it's not even an override, let's just say that they should automatically be allowed to access the location data of wherever your vehicle is because they believe a child has been abducted in your vehicle.
That the child is in.
It's in your car.
Did you hear what I said? I'll repeat it again. Is it my car and someone is driving away in my car with the child, or am I in the car and the child is in the car?
You're in the car.
I am in the car. So are you implying that I didn't see the child and I drove away with the child, or is this a willful act on my part?
They believe it's a willful act on your part that you abducted
the child.
Whatever
they believe, did I intentionally drive away with the child or not? Because, you know, for your hypothetical fact, this is an important hypothetical.
It's their belief. Let's say we don't know whether it's true or not. It's the belief of the police. They have a suspicion that the child may be in your car, not the parents' car, so you consent.
I think allowing you to get away with slightly changing the facts is presenting an entirely different situation, because
not
what was at hand was the owner of the car called the company and said, there is my child in the car that has just been stolen. So we're talking of oranges and apples.
No, they're totally different. This is a tweak
indeed.
In the facts.
They're both vegetables and they're fruits, but, you know, they're very different fruits.
Not necessarily at all,
and
but you haven't answered the question.
More.
So what? But answer me the question.
I will really put you on the spot now. You asked for this because, you know, I think that... And I wanted to make this argument for a very long time. Perhaps, you know, Emmanuel, stop me if I am taking too much time and you have
No, I'm enjoying this.
You want to discuss with other. Okay, good. Then you're really going to go to town. Well, I am going to town. Okay. So I think you're a very good lawyer, Alex. I think your moral compass is sometimes a little off. For example,
isn't that the definition of lawyers, though?
Not necessarily. Somebody like William Kunstler, in the tradition of which I think Alex wants to act, but doesn't always. I think he had a very good moral compass, and you know, both friends and enemies would agree with this assessment. Abrams, another lawyer who was a First Amendment lawyer. There are lawyers who are very principled, and I know quite a few that are not as recognizable, whose names are not as recognizable. But your client, Nancy Wyden, or Nancy Bass Wyden, should we call her? I don't know if she's your client
anymore. You're talking about the owner of the Strand.
Outraged. Yeah, she's the owner of Strand. And the building that is on top of it, incidentally, which is not a small building. And, you know, as a community activist, I run into landlords, both progressives and not progressive at all, who do not want to spend for the upkeeping of buildings that are declared of national interest or city interest. In other words, they are landmarks. And the landmarking law, which incidentally was passed after the Pennsylvania station was destroyed, is intrinsically in the interest of the wider community. So, you know, Nancy Bass, poor Nancy Bass, was being distraught that she was being forced to essentially upkeep, or she was trying to avoid the declaration of a landmark for a building, which is very landmarkable, and it has been landmarked, in fact. Oh, poor Nancy, she didn't have political coverage. Her husband is a U.S. senator, which is, I suspect, how she became your client, Alex, because Senator Wyden is very active in cyber issues. So you didn't disclose this to your audience.
Actually,
you got him rallying.
This was disclosed. This was disclosed many times.
Well, not at the beginning, because I followed the whole controversy. Mm-hmm. And
but it's
in
not
discuss,
how
I didn't listen to a few shows.
Well, I understand what the point is here. I mean, it was a conflict with the city. She didn't want the building landmarked because it wasn't that she didn't want to do. She wanted to do things to the building that she couldn't do because it was landmarked, and that was a real hindrance. And that was the whole point. Do I have this right, Alex?
And also, let me address some of the facts. I think you mischaracterized a few things, or you characterized a few things that you believe are beyond dispute, which they are not certainly beyond dispute. But also, for the record, Senator Wyden was not how Nancy Bass Wyden became my client. He did not direct her to that. In fact, it was the opposite way. In fact, I met Senator Wyden through Nancy Bass Wyden, which is interesting. Just how
I was just speculating, and I made that clear.
Yeah.
I said perhaps.
Yeah.
I didn't say that. I thought that since you're active on cyber issues, perhaps you met the senator that way.
Well, now the perhaps is being addressed. But go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. I just wanted to set that straight. But also, I totally disagree with the characterization of the building that houses the Strand as being remarkable and worthy of being a landmark. You know what was worthy of being a landmark? Was Hotel Pennsylvania.
Don't get me started. Oh, my God.
But the
I
Landmark
totally
Preservation
One
Commission
count
out for the developers in this city more than anybody else. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at what they have allowed to be done to the area around Penn Station and what they are continuing to allow Vornado to get away with. And it's absolutely incredible. They should be ashamed of themselves that they even call themselves preservationists.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing about the Preservation Commission and landmarking in general is that, sure, it's about upkeep and preserving history and whatnot, but unlike zoning laws, where it's a shared burden amongst an entire neighborhood, let's say an entire neighborhood is zoned to be some kind of historic district, or it's zoned to be commercial, or it's zoned to be residential, the burden is shared amongst the community. Landmarking designates one building and one building owner as having to shoulder the burden financially, administratively, forever to upkeep a building according to the specifications of some third-party administrative governmental agency of which it's comprised by political appointees. That's crazy to me. That's totally insane. And I take issue with preservationism.
Sure that it must have, Sorry, go on.
I take issue with preservationism in principle because of the way in which it does not divvy up that burden amongst taxpayers. It puts that burden on a single owner.
Okay, so in the case of a small landlord, which incidentally Nancy Best Wyden is not, the building, do you mind to characterize the building? Is it a small building? Is it a one-family building? It's a, if I'm not mistaken, upward of
15
stories building.
It's
huge because the footprint is the one of store of a Strand bookstore, which everybody knows how big it is, and it prides itself with having 31 miles of books. So it's not exactly a small building. It produces rents, and it produces quite a bit of money. So while I understand your point about making small landlords liable for certain upkeeps, it can be onerous, it's certainly not the case here, which was my point to begin with. And you see, I mean, Senator Wyden is not exactly unconnected. If it's because if Nancy Wyden couldn't find politicians to take her point, it's because her point was indefensible.
Or maybe she played within the system.
You decided to take the case on. Yeah.
Hang on. You're saying,
I don't know, you did probably a good job.
You're saying because somebody
found it objectionable.
You're saying because somebody didn't use connections that they don't have a valid point. To me, that says
that
she played by the rules.
Using the connections. It's not a question of not using the connections. It is a question of trying to use the connections and the connections saying, we can't do this. I'm sorry.
Let me set that straight, too.
Yeah.
Let me set that straight.
And we're going to move on after this because I don't think most of our listeners are interested in this point.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Alex.
But
Senator Wyden.
I don't want to take all your time on. So
let's let Alex address it.
It is fine. And look, I appreciate the sparring and whatnot. But Senator Wyden had nothing to do with the Landmark Preservation Commission. He's a federal senator, right? I mean, he works for the United States government, the United States people of Oregon, not New York.
And of course,
he
knows
nothing
no politicians
to do
in New York City. I mean, you're making a ridiculous argument.
No, right? I'm not. And I will tell
it's
you
a
this, because
argument.
It would have been, it would not
the
have been.
The wife of a senator cannot find a city politician to defend her point
absolutely
of view? Absolutely. I'm sorry. I don't believe
do
any of
this. He had nothing to do with this. He did not interject in any way. He did not try to pull strings. He did not try to influence any local politician.
Imagine that.
He probably could have if he wanted to, but he played by the rules. That's why he hired me, so that we could play by the rules here and have an independent advocate on behalf of the Strand Bookstore and Nancy Best Wyden to try to protect her from governmental overreach here. I mean, it really was a if you look at that building, and I think anybody who looks at that building would say that it is architecturally unremarkable.
I said that when I walked by. This is an unremarkable building. I pointed that out.
It's a very ugly looking building.
I wouldn't go that far. It's not ugly.
Well, it is. It's not, you know, it's nothing remarkable.
It's not the Taj Mahal, no, but it's, you know.
I thought it was being held up by books.
It might be,
there are plenty of buildings, you know, within a one block radius of the Strand that should have been landmark, but the Landmark Preservation Commission failed to act. I still think what they did was important, reprehensible, and there was a rubber stamping. They're kowtowing. I think that the city council really failed in stepping up here as well. It was Corey Johnson at the time and Carlina Rivera. You know, and look, I can understand, caller, that, you know, you're a preservationist. I'm a preservationist at heart as well, when it's justified. I don't think that this was historical or architecturally remarkable.
Well, it's not like the building would have been torn down if it wasn't marked as
a... No, absolutely not. It would not. It would have been upkept in the same exact way that it is upkept now, but just without the administrative interference of a governmental agency telling you when you can and cannot change a toilet.
Okay. Hey, we're going to move on.
Well,
thanks.
It was a matter of upholding the rules and saying what can be done inside a landmark building and what cannot be done inside a landmark building.
But you're assuming it should be landmark to begin with.
Have a cafe inside the building. That's what I seem to recall the crux of the argument was. You know, I don't harp on this in my daily life. I'm recalling from a couple of years ago when I was listening to the show and hearing this and thinking this is outrageous. You know, they're basically starting a grassroots movement for something that is totally the wrong direction. Because, what? You see, as you might have learned by dealing with the Landmark Commission, they often, if not always, have to be literally be pulled by the hair, kicking and screaming. They're being sued currently because they never do their job. So if for once they were doing it, and you know, I didn't see any nefarious interference from somebody who wanted to somehow punish Strand Bookstore or a transversal revenge against Senator Wyden. It was just a matter of looking at the facts. And the facts are the Broadway District is an important district full of landmark building from the 19th and early 20th century, of which the building in question is one. And do the rules for landmarking apply? And, you know, for once, the Landmark Commission did its job and it said, yes, it does.
Now I'll actually tell you what happened there is that they tried to landmark basically the Strand Bookstore because it's the Strand itself, and they thought that, you know, as had some cultural heritage. This is why we made the argument that the Strand was already a landmark. They did not like somebody from the outside telling them that they did not want to be landmark. They were insulted in some way by the fact, or just the very notion, that somebody would refuse to be landmark.
Does that happen often?
In their eyes.
Does that ever happen?
No, it never happened.
It's unusual because they own the building.
Right.
It was a very, very unusual situation. And, you know, the administrative costs that go into it, the running of the strike.
It's more what I see in my daily life that, you know, the owners do not want to be landmark precisely because it infringes upon their potential profits, either selling, modifying the building, making it bigger, or whatever. And this, to me, smacked of that situation. I understand you have a different point of view, but I, you know, that's what it seemed like to me. And the fact that it is a likable and progressive person who was in this position, and believe me, I support the Strand Bookstore. Whenever I buy a book, I buy it there. Also because they are used books, not many people are aware of, you know, most of their books
true.
Are used.
That's a good point. Yeah.
They're not, they do sell some new books, but not the bulk of it. But that still didn't make me, you know, want to support this cause.
Okay, well, that's your right. Now, Kyle, you have something to add?
Oh, I understand where the caller's coming from in that the situation itself would be distinct if the Strand was leasing from any other old building that was up for the same kind of classification, there in that scenario would perhaps be advantages that you're alluding to that aren't necessarily in the interest of the building owner, in this case, the Strand being part of that ownership. It makes it wholly different. Like the old independent bookstore, not having the rights of a building owner would perhaps be up against quite a bit, you know, increases or certain things that classification would help them, maintain that institution, that historical thing. And I think this, it's just a unique scenario. And this is, I think a lot of us had to do a couple takes at this whole story initially, but thanks for reminding us the importance of understanding and digging into it.
Yeah, we're going to leave it there.
You're welcome, and thank you for entertaining my argument.
Of course.
I wanted to make it for years, I'm glad that I finally got to speak my bit.
And you have something to celebrate tonight. I'm going to put you on hold for a second. Thank you, caller, and please call again.
You.
Take care. Now, Alex, if you want to say something, say it now. Not going to have this debate going on forever.
Another thing, but I think that the you know, I appreciate the caller.
Yes.
And I love hearing the other point of view, you know, and I like that how we can discuss this in a civil and amicable way. You know, we can disagree about things and not, you know, be at each other's throats. But one thing that I think that the caller might not have known, because this had happened in front of really just the Landmark Preservation Commission, but we had also proposed to the Landmark Preservation Commission, look, don't rubber stamp the building. We think it's architecturally unremarkable. But if you disagree and you think that the building should be preserved in some way, don't landmark us. We will voluntarily put a preservation easement on the facade of the building so that it's not changed, that it maintains that historical character of which the landmark preservation was about which, rather, they were so concerned.
Mm-hmm.
So we gave them these alternatives to rubber stamping the landmarking, but they had to do it.
Yeah,
they didn't want somebody telling them.
It was like inflexibility.
Yeah, they had to get their way.
Yeah.
So, Alex, no, where does this stand right now? Is it over?
Well, yeah. I mean, for now, it is. I still have some ideas about how to remove the designation. You know, essentially what happened was, you know, we were going to challenge this in court, and then COVID happened.
Right.
And, you know, that really changed the priorities from, you know, challenging the constitutionality of the Landmark Preservation's arbitrary and capricious decision to landmark an unremarkable building to, you know, the survival of the Strand itself. Because remember, right around that time, very unfortuitously, the Strand had also opened a smaller location in the Upper West Side.
Right.
So it had kind of, you know, overextended itself. It was a scary time for the bookstore
mm-hmm.
when COVID happened and everybody was locked down. So I'm really happy to say, though, that the Strand is alive and I think doing well. So,
and, you know, everyone is assuming that because Ron Wyden is Nancy's husband, that he's involved in this somehow. My understanding is he doesn't even know she owns the Strand. So please, people, you know, keep your mouth shut about this. You know, it's an independent project. He's doing the senator thing. Let's let them do their own things, okay, without interfering.
Yeah, he didn't play a role in trying to grease the wheels here at all.
We'll tell him someday what she's up to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. But about the hotel, I don't know if you've gone by there recently, but I hear only 10 floors are left, that a lot of it has been removed, and it's just weird to think of. Oh, and Alex has disappeared too. Alex, are you there?
Yeah, he's there.
There you are. Okay.
I'm here.
It's just weird to think the places that we had the conferences in, you know, those rooms, they're not there anymore. They just don't exist. There's just sky. That is something. But there was also a story a couple of weeks ago, actually, about some other ideas. You know, they're doing all kinds of reconstruction of Penn Station. They're going to be bringing Metro North in a couple of years. They want Madison Square Garden to leave because having a massive Coliseum on top of your train station apparently limits what you can do. And if they weren't there, it would be better, a lot of people think. And guess where they're thinking of moving Madison Square Garden? Across 7th Avenue to where the hotel used to be. That's right. The Hope Conferences will have been held on the potential future grounds of Madison Square Garden. They suggested the world's most famous arena could relocate across 7th Avenue if a new permit deal can be reached. The executive vice president, Joel Fisher, in a meeting with Manhattan Community Board 5 about the company's permit to run the building, said a move to the block now occupied by the Hotel Pennsylvania might work. That would probably satisfy us. But ultimately, who's going to pay for that? Where's the money? That plan hasn't come to us. But that would satisfy being right on top of a transportation hub. The Garden's 10-year permit to operate the building expires in July, with officials filing an application for a special permit to run the facility forever. And I don't think they're going to get that. As for a new garden east of the current incarnation, the price tag for redeveloping the new space was estimated at a minimum of $8.5 billion. According to Community Board 5 Chair Layla Law-Gasico, this was certainly, for us, the first time that we've heard Madison Square Garden express that they would consider this option. So that would be weird. That would be weird if they moved Madison Square Garden to where the hotel used to be. better than an office building, I think, but still, I don't know, sad.
Well, it shouldn't even be an option, because the Landmark Preservation Commission, which is, you know, ready to rubber stamp and landmark every Duane Reade in the city if they could, refused to do that with Hotel Pennsylvania because they were kowtowing to the interests of commercial real estate developers, massive commercial real estate developers. And we're talking about billions and billions of dollars worth of fees and construction, too. I mean, it's sad that moving Madison Square Garden to the site of Hotel Pennsylvania is even an option. Hotel Pennsylvania should be the site of Hotel Pennsylvania forever, because that was a building with so much history. Mm-hmm. It was certainly worthy of landmarking. And what did they do? Absolutely nothing.
Right. And
these
now,
are also, you know, it's sad. I feel like, you know, we lost Penn Station. Now we're trying to make up for it in some way by making that area look like Dubai.
I'm curious if they would pick it up and actually roll it across the street.
I don't think so. No, I don't think that's how it works. But the hotel is, from what I hear, gone as far as most of the floors. And it's just sad. I mean, you know, we landed on our feet. We've got a great place at St. John's. We're happy with that. But all the people that saw New York through that place and could afford to visit New York because it was fairly cheap, you know, they're not going to be here anymore. And that's a tragedy. All right, so enough about that. We have another phone call. 802-321-4225 is our phone number. And good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Hi. I actually left a message because I was about to hang up because I'm at work, but I figured I'd try one more time, and I got through. So
all
I
right.
guess just disregard if you hear a message from somebody named Jonas. So, like, basically, my main thing is I've been listening to, like, your... I've been listening to a lot of, like, I guess mainly like your old shows. I just find it fascinating. But my main, but my thing with that is that my question was, in terms of like AI, you were talking about that earlier. It's like, would it be better if it was like, if it's a centralized thing, or if we all had our own like kind of like I guess it'd be like, you know, there's like ChatGPT. That's the thing that you follow up, but it's its own thing. If there was like if it was personalized to you. That seems like it would be like a horrible idea, but that was something that popped into my head. So it's kind of like, I kind of wanted to like, what would be your thoughts on that, I guess?
There has to be different personalities for all sorts of things, artificial or natural.
Exactly. Yeah.
I guess you could have, you know, a fascist chat GPT.
That's what I was thinking.
Uh-huh.
I was like, is there a fascist one you can get or what?
Yeah,
I
mean,
that, but I'm just saying, like,
it's just
I'm
words.
Sure there's going to be it.
Mm-hmm. And you could have a Trumpian one that just distorts facts and makes things up and lies. You could do that.
Yeah, exactly.
And do it quickly, I suppose. But where does that leave us? I don't know.
That's what I'm saying. I feel like it's like everything's so like targeted that like it's just a matter of time before it's like there's like little splinters of it like that where there's like, you know, you won't be able to maybe know that it's the Trump one, but you know, you'll be able to tell based on like what it says. I don't know.
Uh-huh.
Very like, to me, that seems interesting. I don't know.
I don't know. What do you think, Alex? Or Kyle?
There I am.
I don't want to interrupt.
Go ahead, Kyle.
Oh, I can see it advancing to a point where it can work sort of offline or, as you sort of said, centralized. I think all of that is sort of still in people's imaginations and being conceptualized by the wider industry. So to that end, I think ultimately the idea would be to and I think of this sort of like when we had like GPS with custom voice skins, but basically a compact semiconductor of some sort that has memory that upon being reset or activated begins to learn whomever or whatever they're interacting with, and based on the types of learning and innate design that is based on this GPT-4 or whatever we're at, you know, in any given point. And maybe it could be upgraded over the air, but mostly working locally, like you suggest. I can imagine that, but I think it is still being conceptualized, and it's up to wherever people's creative minds go. And I think there's a lot of possibilities in this, but it's just in the way memory has gotten cheaper and smaller. I think this will be something that people will want offline anywhere, you know.
And we've asked ChatGPT for its input in this, and it responds that it's possible to create multiple instances of ChatGPT with different training data, which could potentially result in different patterns of responses. However, each instance of ChatGPT would still be limited by the data it has been trained on, and its responses would be determined by the data rather than personal opinions or beliefs. Additionally, it's important to note, AI language models like myself are not sentient beings with personal opinions or beliefs. While I'm capable of generating responses based on patterns and data, I do not possess the consciousness or subjective experience necessary to hold personal opinions. For now. I added that part.
For now.
We'll see.
But yeah, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
That was actually kind of what I was interesting. All right.
Uh-huh. And but yeah, you mentioned you're listening to older shows as well. Do you find them still to be of interest?
Yeah. No, on my MP3. No, I get into rabbit holes fairly often, and I ever since I read that, what's that book, Hackers by Stephen Levy, I've been like just going like off. I'm like, I never experienced any of that stuff. I'm like 20 and you know, and stuff. So it's like, I never experienced any of it, but it's just, to me, it's like this whole thing that, like, I don't know, none of the people I'm around, like, I don't know.
You'd be surprised, though. There are people everywhere. There are people everywhere who...
That's what I'm trying to find.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's what 2600 meetings bring out. That's what conferences bring out. And, of course, just the letter section in the magazine and the radio. All sorts of forums
I am going to send a letter at some point. I just couldn't kind of work out because I never written a letter before. Uh-huh. Yeah, thank you, guys.
Thank you. Thanks for listening. Take care.
And you can always write oth@2600.com. Mm-hmm. We love letters. We love reading them. We love getting people's feedback on how we're doing or insights on old stuff, how it might be relevant or whatever kind of wandering you're doing with stuff we've talked about or other stuff you find out there. And definitely stay connected in, if there's like a community college or clubs in your neighborhood, affinity groups of all types, as long as they're sort of respectful in some way to who you are and, your sort of interest in learning, your lack of knowledge about stuff, all of those things should be a part of the people you're surrounding yourself with. Like, they should be considerate of you and where you're at in learning stuff and be open to sharing what they know without a lot of pretension and so forth.
It's amazing to see what people are interested in, whether it's old technology or new technology or theoretical technology. It doesn't matter, young, old. There are people who are interested in the old phone network, for instance, who are kids, interested in payphones, and the way the Bell system used to be strung together. Just last week, I heard that vinyl records outsold CDs for the first time since CDs came about. So there are people who appreciate all kinds of older things. And are spending time improving them and being creative.
And there are vastly more devices and things you can hook them up to. You can kind of hybridize the older analog things or do digital recordings of some of the nuances of them, or share people how you're maintaining stuff. Share with them how you're building or finding parts for things that are really kind of neglected or have been long forgotten. That's the magic of it. And I'm thinking of talks we've had at Hope where people are emulating old phone systems and they didn't even have the systems, and that's why they wanted to go and emulate it so that they could play around with it as though it still existed. That keeps the fascination alive, keeps the stories alive. It inspires people to do other stuff on their own. And I'm just heartened that people are out there. And one thing that helps me, and I would just say to everyone, is give yourself a little bit of a break. It's a vast subject matter, and it's a lifetime of learning about technology and computers. There's so many different subjects and areas of interest.
Yeah, and remember, nobody knows everything. And you may not know a lot about the field that you're interested in right now, and that's why you'll learn more. And you'll know something that somebody else doesn't, and you'll be able to share your unique perspective to make that particularly interesting. Alex, did you have something as well?
No, I think that it's. I think you hit it on the head there, and I think that's part and parcel of what it means to be a
hacker, which is maintaining this almost childlike sense of wonder about the world and continuing to ask questions, continuing to learn. You know, this is actually something that came up this morning in my class at King's College, where people were asking, you know, there's so much to learn about cybersecurity. You know, is there one book that we should read? Is there something that we should look at? You know, not really. You just have to be open to learning constantly. You have to be open and to being in situations where you may not have complete knowledge, but you're willing to continue to try to acquire that knowledge, to ask the questions, to figure out how systems work. That's what it means to be a hacker. It has nothing, I think, to do with technical prowess and exploits and things like that. To me, it's always been more philosophical than technical.
All right, we have another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off Talk Overtime. Go ahead.
Greetings from London.
Is this Zap?
Hey,
yes,
Zap.
It is.
Greetings, Zap. How are you?
I'm okay, I suppose. I'm only phoning up because I've got more sad news.
I did hear about this sad news. Yeah. Yet another member of the London 2600 crew has passed. Do you want to tell us something about them?
Yeah. Unfortunately, another hacker's been backed up to the cloud. We've now lost Master Vic, who was current attending the meetings. The last meeting he attended was in January of this year, when we had a special guest of Text Files being at the meeting. The timeline we have for him is he missed the Friday's meeting that just went. Somebody spoke to him during the day saying he would attend, but he didn't make it. So we know that sometimes he comes traveling from a distance from work. So he could have been tired and couldn't make the meeting, or basically he was too tired just to make the meeting because he has health problems. Or normally he doesn't make it because of his health problems. He's either in bed ill or he's in hospital. So as we do at the London 2600, we like to check up on people. I gave him a call on Sunday. It was a bit late. I didn't get hold of him. But that's just normal, so we didn't really worry. Unfortunately, on the Monday, the phone number for Master Vic, he phoned me. Unfortunately, I was taking a nap and didn't hear the phone. So we believe he was still alive on the Monday night. And by Wednesday, another one of the crew had messaged me on our Discord saying that he'd actually passed away, which, of course, you don't believe. You think somebody's playing a joke. So I tried ringing his number. The number got picked up by a lady, which was unusual. Said, hold on a minute. And they then passed me on to his uncle, who told me the bad news that he'd passed away, we believe, on the Tuesday, the 7th of March.
Wow. Just about a week ago. So that's really sad to hear.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, I would have phoned in last week, but you were off air. By the way, hi, Alex. Hi, Kyle. Hi, Emmanuel.
Hello.
Got a bit of a tease.
Always good to hear you.
Yeah, glad you called.
Yeah, you know I'm going to phone on something like that, just to let everyone know. Because basically, the family are FTPing Master Vic back to Cyprus. I don't know if they're going to win-rar him up before he goes, but there isn't going to be a funeral. There isn't going to be a funeral in the UK that we know of, so we're holding a memorial for him, which will be on the 26th of March at the Angel Pub, which is on 61 St. Giles High Street.
That's where the meetings London. Are, right? Is that where the meetings take place?
That's where the second venue is. Normally we go from the phone box to the pub.
Got it.
And that's actually another topic that I need to discuss, because we've now got some arguments, and we're going to be maybe eliminating the phone box, because nobody goes to the phone box. They go straight to the pub, which I'm not happy about, but there's not much I can do.
Well, let me just say, if you do that, it's going to be 3 months before it makes it to the magazine, because we just put the magazine to print. So,
and that prevents it from being all ages. Isn't that the angle?
Yes, it does. But we don't get the kids turning up anymore. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Well, you won't now, and we can't have meetings in places that are restricted. So there's that.
Yeah, that's That's my point and my angle that I'm trying to tell them. That's why I said,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
you got... is literally next door to the pub. I don't see what the problem is.
Well, I mean, you know, if they let people in, fine. But if they don't let certain people in, then that's definitely an issue.
I was there on Sunday because there was a small group of us and there was actually children allowed in the pub. But I think that's before a certain time.
Yeah, that's in the daytime.
And we've managed to get youngsters into the pub before. As long as they're not drinking, it shouldn't really be a problem. It's all down to the law and the pub. But we're hackers. We get brown things, shall we say.
Right. Okay, well, you know, if it's not a problem, but if it turns into an issue, then, you know, we got to look at it.
Lots of times, too, it can be like a case-by-case thing, especially if they come with an adult or someone's looking out for them, so to speak. So, I mean, you talk to the venue and, like you're talking already with the booth, maybe keep that argument going at least for that as a contingency.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, it's only one person that's suggesting that, and then unfortunately, we've just updated our website to the new location from the Trocadero, finally to the phone box and our proper website. But yeah, I'm going to be fighting for that phone box until the day I die, basically, because we need a public space, and it's because, you know, it's if young people do decide to turn up, at least they get like an hour of chat, and then we can see what we can do, if we can change the second location to... say a cafe or a McDonald's where a youngsters can go and they won't be a legal problem.
Right.
And also, because I heard on a side topic about Dante here with the ChatGPT, if he's in London, he should come to the London 2600 meeting. We've got a vacancy.
Well, it's not like there are assigned seats or anything like that, but it's open to all. It's definitely a welcoming place. I've been there.
It's definitely open to all, but like I said, if he's in London, I don't know if he's aware there's actually a London 2600 meeting. I believe the next meeting will be the 7th of April. He should turn up. We're a friendly bunch. We just had a new person turn up in the February meeting. She's came back to the March meeting, and she got on really well with me, and she won't come back unless I'm there, and I don't go to all the meetings due to health reasons and other factors. That's basically it, really. There's two of our crew that we're worried about because they're not handling the news very well.
Yeah.
I'm keeping tabs with one. Diesel Dragon has now gone back to a meeting after 3 years, and he was at the January meet. It was the last time he saw Mastervic, and he also bumped into Textiles, so that made him stay. And Textiles was very... that's Jason Scott, obviously.
Right, yeah.
Which is very popular. He's got a lot of stories. If you ever meet that guy... and you can get him into a bar, buy him drinks, and let him chat.
I've had the pleasure many times, and it is an honor.
Yeah. I thank him from the bottom of my heart for turning up, because he actually gave me a lot of kudos from the rest of the crew that I managed to get him down. The start of 2023, January, things were looking up. Me and Martha were talking about future developments, trying to get everything to go in certain directions. It looked positive. And then 3 months later, we've been hit with the bad news. But if we won't let it stop us, we'll carry on, and hopefully we can get something going again and doing everything great. But he was a key linchpin in the group. He's actually the one in charge of our infrastructure when it comes to the website, domains, and other things. So we're a bit worried how we're going to get those back, shall we say. But we're looking into that. We're not too worried because we're just trying to get this memorial out the way first. Which his old work colleagues have been invited to. I think we're reaching out to the family if they're around, because they're probably going to go back to Cyprus for the funeral. There's lots of people. He was much loved by the community of hackers and InfoSec. He was a big player, really, and we were all going to miss him. It actually affected me more than when my father died last year. That's how bad it is.
Wow, I'm sorry to hear about that, but wow, that's something that it affected you that way.
Well, people are close when people are real close, you know, peers and so forth. It's tough.
Yeah.
Well, like I said before, London 2600 is like family.
Yeah,
and we care about each other. We have arguments. You know, it's like I have arguments with my brothers and sisters of the 2600. They go away for a little while. Maybe they come back. Maybe they never come back. But, you know, we always miss them, and we sort of keep tabs on them, or I do, not much I can really say. That's all I want to say about Marsfield. There's one thing that's bugging me. I remember you called out saying about helping the magazine by getting Kindle subscriptions.
Oh, yes.
Which I'm doing, and they're taking the money out of the bank, which I'm quite happy that they do it because it supports 2600, and I love that. But you said that they're going to stop it. They changed the policy of saying, should I keep paying or should I cancel it? I don't want Amazon to get my money.
Well, no, I mean, as long as it's still something you can do, it'll still support us. What we are working on right now, and we are working on this right now, is coming up with something that will replace the Kindle or the Kindle subscription that people can still read on their Kindles or be able to have a PDF version of the magazine as a subscription, not just each issue. And you'd be surprised. This isn't something that exists readily, at least not the way that we want it to exist, where people's personal information is kept secure, where you don't have a third party handling all this private data, where things are kept online, where they could be compromised, and where we don't have DRM. We don't want to have DRM on our magazine so that people can copy it and see it on different devices that they already own. So all of this, you know, we want to do it right. And we've been working on that for the last couple of months, and we expect to have something to debut in the very, very near future. And that hopefully will take over for what we lose with Kindle. Now, it's a lot, you know. We're thinking maybe several thousand subscribers on the Kindle, 5,000 maybe. And we can't reach all of them because, weirdly enough, we're not able to contact our own subscribers on Kindle. Amazon keeps that to themselves. And unless we get their attention in the magazine, they may not even know something is going to be happening to their subscription. So
until we disappear.
Until we disappear. And then they just will assume we disappeared. So we really need to be able to raise our voices and get some attention so that we have those thousands of subscribers coming back to us. And then we'll be all right. You know, if we can do that, we won't ever lose them again because we'll be controlling it. It won't be Amazon controlling it. And hopefully people will stick around.
We really, really encourage people to spread the word, share with others, tell the story. It's a great way to talk about what's going on with a lot of publishing and self-publishing and distribution and so forth. And like he said, there's a lot of constraints. There's a lot of considerations that we've had conversations about. We've been appealing to a lot of dedicated people from the community that have insights and so forth. So we want to orchestrate basically this migration of readers.
And we don't have anything on the 2600.com webpage yet. We will very soon because we don't have anything to update yet. And that's about to change.
But we're going to get the announcement made and basically invite people to sign up and check it out.
I'm sure you'll find a way. I think you're pretty good with technology.
Well, it's definitely something we've had practice at, but
we have a lot of support, a lot of good people that
great
really,
ideas.
Really pour their hearts into this, and we would be nowhere without them. And you are counted as one of them.
Well, I appreciate that, and I thank you for that. I will definitely spread the word, and I will try and get as many people to sign up. If it's not a paper copy, then the digital copies. I more or less force everyone to buy your merchandise with the hacker uniform.
Uh-huh.
Not that they have to, but we try and convince it so that we can recognize each other. But yeah, I'm always pro 2600 company, man. That's why I stay away.
Well, we have all kinds of ideas. Anyway. We're going to be adding all kinds of new things, so we'll be talking about that when it happens.
Thanks for asking, though.
All right, I better clear down the line because it's unfair to other listeners not to go in. I've hogged the thing, so please forgive me, everyone that's listening to this. But it was important news.
No, thank you so much for sharing that. And I think Alex has something to say. Go ahead.
Yes, I'm so sorry to hear about Master Vic, and thank you for letting me know a few days ago about that as well. And I just haven't been in London during the first Friday of the month, but I have really great and fond memories of the crew, including Diesel Dragon. You know, from my years when I lived in London, and you were so incredibly welcoming, and the crew was wonderful, and I miss you guys. And look,
Yeah, my time when I'm in London is a little bit crazy.
You're both in London right now. I just realized that. You're both in the same place.
We're both in London.
Why don't you meet for a pint over at pub?
That's exactly what I was about to say. We got to get together, man. You should come. I don't remember exactly where it is in London that you live, but the city's not that big. We should get together and clink glasses.
Actually, the city is really big.
Yes, definitely, but we'll find a way to meet up. Listen, you've got my Twitter. Message me on Twitter and we can arrange that. I may even bring down some of the crew because we are doing small gatherings before, like, the memorial. And there's other people that are in London, so maybe I can get some together. I'll see if I can get Flip down because I know you two guys used to hang out together. Definitely. As soon as you're in town, then, you know, we don't have to meet up on a 2600 meeting. You know, we can actually go out and see other times.
I know, yeah. I heard you leave the house when it's not the first Friday of the month. So, yeah, let's take advantage of that.
I am insanely jealous right now because I want to be a part of this.
Well, you're always welcome, Emmanuel. And, you know, if you get in touch with us and we know that you're in town, I'm sure that we can get a small gathering of people and do, like, a special meet-up. So, I mean, we try to do a meeting nearly every 2 weeks with our mid-months. They sort of stopped because due to the pandemic. But you guys know how to get hold of me, so, you know, just get in touch and I'll see if I can arrange something.
You just basically shout down the street and somebody will know how to get a hold of Zap.
That's true.
It's true.
That's true.
Everybody sort of knows me. And, Rebel, stop ringing up and hogging the phone line all the time.
He's calling right now. I don't know how you know that.
Wow. I'm a psychic. You should know this by now.
Oh,
Okay. All right, look, I'm sorry to take your time. Just for the record, you guys, you do daylight savings before us in the UK.
Right.
And I nearly got caught out with the show. I missed the radio show on WBAI, but I sort of caught up on the tail end. I'm sorry that Rob and Gila are not on today. I don't know why, but I send my regards. Listen, I've spoken too much. I need to clear down this line and see if somebody else can phone in or you need to wrap up the show.
I think we're done.
It's getting a bit late.
I think we're done for the night because what time is it over there, Zap?
It's 1:06, so 6 minutes past one in the morning.
Yeah, so that's past Alex's bedtime, so I don't want to keep him up too long. He gets cranky in the morning.
Perfect hour to commence hacking.
That's true, too. Yes, absolutely.
That's true.
All right, Zap.
Well, just for the record, I was going to say, just the last thing, just for the record, if you haven't done daylight saving, it normally is 2 o'clock over in the UK when I'm listening to the show and phoning in.
Interesting. So it's an hour earlier.
We're lucky we caught him,
Wow. Oh, yeah. Cool. But I don't phone up all the time, obviously, because I don't have anything to say and I don't need to phone up every time. But we're surviving with Brexit. There's the food shortages and everything, but yeah, we'll carry on. Anyway, Nick, thank you for taking the phone call, and hopefully I'll see you guys soon. Alex, I'll see you very soon with any luck. Hook me up on on my socials or whatever. But yeah, thank you.
All right. Be well,
Zap.
Take care.
Bye.
All right, our friend Zap from London. You know, speaking of daylight savings, before people start suggesting, hey, why don't we keep this all the time, because that always happens every damn time, and the voices are getting louder. People don't seem to remember. I think this might be before your time, Alex, but when I was a kid, they did that. They had daylight savings all year long. They tried it out. It was a disaster because kids had to wake up and wait for the school bus in the pitch black dark, you know, when the sun hadn't come up yet because it was an hour later, right? That's what it is, an hour later. Is there an hour later? I always get messed up with this.
You lost me.
Yeah.
Well, whatever it is, you wound up waiting for a school bus and it was dark and people were getting hit by cars and they only did that 1 year. I think it was only 1 year. So let's not make the same mistake again.
Well, maybe school should just start later.
You could do that. Yeah, maybe do that instead. I don't know.
Yeah.
But
it's too goddamn early.
Yeah, I don't know. Regular time is fine with me, but you know, whatever time you want to make it. What, it's like 9 a.m. now. Tell me that. Okay, fine. I'll make it work. All right, are we done?
We're
I think so.
All right,
we're well done.
Okay,
medium. Yeah.
Well, then, thanks to everybody for being a part of the show. And
are we on next week?
We are on next week, as far as I know, unless something happened that I don't know.
All right.
Of course, you can write to us, oth@2600.com. We would love to hear from anybody who cares to write to us. We always get such nice letters and nice phone calls, too. Thank you, everybody who called in. We will see you next time.
So long.
Good night.